KCRW, this is Greater LA. Hey there, it's the show that connects you to the people and places and pollinators of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The Los Angeles County Arboretum in Arcadia is known for its peacocks and colorful flowers, which are a tasty smorgasbord for bees. Those are the sounds of feral honeybees, and they, like other bee species, are important for pollinating every plant and crop in California, keeping the state's economy buzzing. Well, this year it seems a bit harder to find bumblebees than usual.
We know that there is a problem for bumblebees. The bumblebees are becoming rarer, that many species are in trouble. In North America, about a quarter of all species of bumblebees are at some risk of extinction. That's a lot of animals.
Leif Richardson coordinates the California Bumblebee Atlas, a kind of census for California's bees. And he's at the Arboretum with a group of volunteers today because, well, where there's flowers, there are also, hopefully, bees. Reporter Susan Vallet is in on the sting.
Are you here for bumblebees?
Leif Richardson sets down a bunch of insect nets and a bag of plastic vials for catching bumblebees and addresses the volunteers.
We are doing real science. Like, you are amateurs who are trained if you join me, but the data that you collect is not just sort of to get people engaged in nature or something. This is the data set that CDFW will use to evaluate whether these bees deserve listing.
If the California Department of Fish and Wildlife or the federal government decides to list the bees as endangered later, the data they collect today could be the reason why.
It's your bee that might actually be part of that question.
The volunteers will be using the nets Richardson brought to catch at least one of the roughly 25 different species of bumblebees that call California home.
And the easiest way to use it is to swing horizontally right through the plane where the bee is, and the bee goes right in the net. You go past the net, and then you flick it like that.
So today, they'll spend a few minutes in a specific area looking for the insects that, unlike social honeybees, live much of the year on their own. These volunteers are among more than 500 working on this project statewide.
It's an amazing resource, the fact that people donate this labor to us, to the project, and it works. We are able to gather thousands of records of bumblebees each summer.
Scientists can use those records to figure out which bumblebees are where and which kinds are most abundant. Future studies could then look at the change over time.
So just look inside and see if you see anything big and lumbery moving around. Oh, here's more white sage. Check that.
Volunteer Stephanie Cashin of Anaheim is an actual wildlife biologist. But so far, after a few minutes, we're striking out. A total buzzkill. Until...
Oh. Right here. So that's a female carpenter.
And it flies off. And it's not quite what we're looking for. Sort of a bumblebee lookalike.
Come on.
Richardson says climate change seems to be forcing bees to pull out of the hotter parts of their range and head upslope. Some higher elevation bees could simply run out of places to go. The other issue is that certain bumblebees pollinate certain plants. That means shifts in temperature could lead to plants flowering early, before the bumblebees emerge from hibernation. The plants could lose a pollinator, and the bumblebees could lose food. And with this year's cold and rains, the wildflowers have bloomed later, with the bees delayed too.
It's possible that, I'm speculating now, but the heavy snowpack is probably leading to bees staying in hibernation longer, which means they could run out of stored resources, internal resources, and starve. So there is a concern there. They could be damaged by the floodwaters or just all of this water. We don't really know. But if they survive the winter, this is a very good spring to be a bumblebee. There are more flowers than ever.
Over by the benches in the center of the wildflower garden, Diana Nightingale of the San Gabriel Valley has something in her net. She's trying to get it into a vial.
I'm kind of nervous, actually. I don't think I'm being scared. I haven't gotten stung by a bee since high school, maybe.
Just as Nightingale moves her vial closer to the bee...
Oh, wait. Let's see where she goes.
It finds a hole in her net and flies away. Nightingale says she's really excited to get out there and search for more bumblebees.
Every time I see a bumblebee, I just fall in love. So I'm just madly in love. So I used to run a California Native Butterfly Pavilion, and I kind of fell in love with insects that way. And so, you know, kind of broadening the range of just learning about these little tiny creatures we share the world with is exciting.
By the end of the morning search, one bumblebee did emerge from a net, the only one that the group was able to find. Richardson pulls it out of the cooler, where it's been chilling, to slow it down. The bees aren't killed for the survey. They're re-released.
This is a rare bumblebee. It's called Crotch's bumblebee, or Bombus crotchii. This one is protected by law.
This one is among four bumblebee species on the candidate list for protection as endangered or threatened. But Richardson says it's hard to protect some of the bumblebees.
An interesting thing about this bee is that we know almost nothing about where it nests, and we know zero about where it spends the winter. So you can see how this would be a problem for environmental review. Like, we want to protect this bee from development, but we don't know where it goes for 6 to 8 months of the year. It's likely it's drilling itself into the ground a couple of inches and burying itself, and that's how they hibernate. That's how other species do it. But there's never been a report of hibernation by this bee. And there has never been a report of nesting by this bee until we found three nests already this year.
Thanks in part to the California Bumblebee Atlas. Richardson says they have funding through at least next year. Volunteers will keep fanning out around the state through the end of the summer flowering season. Richardson says they hope to someday expand the bumblebee survey nationwide, all in the quest to save the bees. For KCRW, I'm Susan Vallett.
I listen when I get up in the morning. I listen during the afternoon. During the evenings, it's just always on. I would say, look at how much you're spending on other things. Look at your other subscriptions and the value you get for them. Look at the value you get for KCRW and give a little bit.
That is some good advice. Thank you for your support of KCRW. You're listening to Greater LA, and yeah, listen, that's the key word. I know you're a listener. Now, I'm hoping you're a member. Support obviously means listening, but we're asking that you put your money where your ears are. During KCRW's Save Our Summer campaign, we're asking you to give so we can stay strong and healthy through the summer and into the latter part of the year. The resources that we need to keep doing what we do have gotten a lot more expensive over the years, just like your groceries and rent and gas. So thank you for your years of support. If you can, consider giving monthly, maybe throw in a little extra to match the moment at kcrw.com/give. That's kcrw.com/give. And thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. What began as a commemoration of the Stonewall Uprising, a tipping point for the gay rights movement, has now grown to a global celebration. And here in Southern California, Pride Month means parades and remembrances, workshops, all kinds of events all over the place. And here to tell us about some of the many, many Pride events happening this June is the editor of the Los Angeles Blade newspaper, Brody Levesque. Hi, Brody.
Hey there, Steve, and hello to all of the listeners out there. Happy Pride, folks.
Happy Pride. So L.A. Pride is shaping up to be one of the hottest tickets in town. Tell us about some of the other festivities kicking things off this weekend.
Well, this weekend we're going to see the kickoff of the second Pride is being held by the city of West Hollywood. They start on Friday. The parade is on Sunday. There is going to be a 3-day concert Friday night, starting with Idina Menzel, of course, from Disney's Frozen. That's the free concert. My understanding from talking to the concert organizers is that show, all the tickets have been handed out. The next 2 days, we'll see Carly Rae Jepsen will be there. It's headlining. Grace Jones is also headlining. This ticketed festival, Outlaw at WeHail Pride, is Saturday, June 3rd and Sunday, June 4th. Other performances will be had by Orville Peck, Passion Pit, and a bunch of other artists. So that's going on in West Hollywood this weekend. And then we also have Beverly Hills Pride is kicking off tonight. Venice Pride kicks off tomorrow. And then next weekend is Los Angeles Pride. And that's, of course, obviously the Legacy Pride. That was dating back to the Christopher Street Pride in 1970. It was the first Pride in Southern California. Last year, it returned to its origins and legacy in Hollywood. They are back next weekend for 3 days. We also have Long Beach Pride this month coming up, and we have prides going on in South Los Angeles, the San Fernando Valley, Pasadena, and some of the smaller jurisdictions around Southern California, including Orange County and Riverside counties as well. So it's pretty much a big deal.
And we've got Carly Rae versus Mariah, right? Mariah Carey's the one downtown.
Right, exactly. It's kind of a, if you will, a battle of the divas in terms of the musical talent that'll be out there for these two Pride events. That's correct.
And Santa Monica's having something too over at the pier, right? So if you want to stay closer to the coast, you can do that as well.
Yeah, if you want to stay closer to the coast, Saturday, Semo Pride kicks off their festival along the 3rd Street Promenade down through the pier itself, and it's basically turning that whole area into a massive Pride zone. It's an all ages, lots of free swag games and much more. And I want to give a shout out because the Santa Monica Public Library is going to be sharing queer books for kids, including a special drag queen story time suitable for all ages and abilities. That in the business community of Santa Monica pulled together and done a marvelous job of sponsorship. This year is Colors of Pride. That's what it's called. So congratulations to Santa Monica.
This year, Brody, you know, Pride Month is happening at a time when there are efforts all over the country to, you know, claw back rights for LGBTQ folks, even here in Greater LA with the recent burning of a rainbow flag over at Satakoi Elementary School in the Valley. Do you think there's going to be a different feel to Pride this year, given the political climate? I mean, it's a select few people who are doing a lot of this, so I don't want to draw that much attention, but there is something there.
Steve, look, it is definitely something there, and this year has seen anti-LGBTQ animus across the board more or less amplified. It's been amplified by 530-plus pieces of anti-trans and anti-queer bills in state houses all over the place. You just mentioned the incident that I reported on at Satakoi Elementary School. I reported yesterday on the fact that earlier this month, the city council out in Redlands decided no Pride flag this year, and that was after an extremely contentious battle in two different distinct city council meetings back in March and then on May 3rd. This Pride does feel different. And, I need to remind our listeners, historically, Pride was a protest. You know, when everyone got together in June of 1970, the year after the Stonewall Inn incident, it wasn't a celebration so much as, you know, a note that we need our rights, okay? We have to show people that we are here. You know, the biggest problem with the LGBTQ community overall is a matter of perception. We're seen as an issue. We are never seen as a people. And I really think that that needs to change. Pride, while for our community, is a celebration and it's a chance for us to embrace not only just our queer identity, but, you know, our allies and everyone that supports us, our families in particular. It also has to be noted that there are a lot of people who really don't care for us. And, you know, I'll point you to a statement that came from President Biden yesterday. In his proclamation, the president said, and I'm just going to do this one sentence, our nation faces another inflection point. The president was directly referring to all of the legislation and all of the anti-gay animus that has been propelling the arguments on the political right. We've seen it from noisy figureheads like Republican Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida to folks in the flyover states, and then even in incidences that we're seeing here in California, again, referring to the Pride flag being burned at Santa Clara Elementary in North Hollywood. So, yes, it very much has a different feel to it.
What kind of security is out there, given that there are these things happening? I mean, that's a physical attack when you burn a flag. You know, is there a beefing up of security with these events?
There is. Most of the events and a lot of the law enforcement that I've spoken to, particularly the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, who, as you know, provide police contract services for many of the 88 jurisdictions in Los Angeles County. And, of course, the Los Angeles Police Department, the Santa Monica Police Department, and of course, the Long Beach Police Department are stepping up their efforts, and they will be a visible presence.
Happy Pride, Brody Levesque, editor of the Los Angeles Blade. Thanks for coming on, Brody, and giving us the rundown. We appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. Thank you.
More of Greater LA Now from KCRW, and May Gray has turned the calendar page to June gloom, so you may not yet be in the mood for a summer retreat. But how about a weekend getaway, or maybe a little staycation in town? Santa Barbara rarely disappoints, whether as home or home away from home. Complete with stunning views, a world-class wine culture, and a fabulously thriving food scene, it's the perfect way to get away from it all without going very far at all. And lucky for us, Eaters Mona Holmes has the lowdown on how to spend a perfect day trying all of the Central Coast culinary delights. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
You and some of your fellow eater reporters recently compiled this guide to some of the favorite Santa Barbara spots. The range is pretty stunning. So why does SB in this area have such a rich and diverse food scene?
I love Santa Barbara, and there's a number of reasons why. It is in arguably one of the most beautiful parts of Southern California's many coasts, you know, huge coastlines. But there's also a lot of heritage there, not only from the people who have come and taken up the space recently, but from historic sites and restaurants and businesses. I just think it's a magical part of the coast, along with a lot of wine.
Well, the wine is very important. If you don't live there, Mona, how do you get there? Do you take the 101? Is it, you know, you go up the coast, either up or down the coast to get there, or maybe you take a train because the train does go there too.
I'm a big advocate on the train. Have you done it?
I have not.
It is wonderful. It's great. You go over to Union Station or wherever your stop is. Mine happens to be in a Glendale. And you hop on there, you plug into a podcast, get a book, and just take the 2-hour and 49-minute ride that drops you off right into the base of State Street in Santa Barbara. And you don't deal with your car. Just enjoy the trek.
All right. So let's get to the good stuff, right? Do you head first to coffee? Do you do carbs? Like what's the first stop once you get there?
How about we do coffee and carbs together?
That's
the way to start any morning, really. I love Oat Bakery, and they use organic oats, unbleached flour, and they produce a huge range of breads and pastries, and also really good coffee. But I'm also a big fan of Pan Dulce from a traditional Mexican bakery. And Panaderia Veronica has been around for decades. They're a 2-block walk from the Pacific Ocean. They're just a very unfussy, great spot that opens at 5 a.m. and they stay open until they sell out, and they always sell out. And if you need some extremely strong coffee, just go into Locum. It's a Turkish cafe, the strongest coffee that you'll ever have, along with, of course, Turkish Delight and a ton of baklava. That's some of the best I've ever had.
So you load up on the caffeine, you load up on the sugar, and then you go about your morning or, you know, for a few hours, and then it's time for lunch. Where to for lunch?
Go over to Bettina. It's one of my favorite places to get pizza, not just in Santa Barbara, but anywhere. I don't know what they do to that dough, but Steve, it's phenomenal. You know, there's a really cute indoor area and an outdoor patio that encompasses all the businesses of that shopping center. And get the pizza. It is phenomenal. But if you're not in the mood for that, they've also got some wonderful pastas. And also too, and I'm a big fan of great wines, and their wine list is one of the best I've seen in that region.
Let's talk about the vino, shall we? Because that's how you cap a nice day. Where do you do the wine? And, you know, so give us some ideas of that. And if you don't drink, if you don't partake, right, then what do you do then?
Well, you can do two things. You can drive 30 minutes to the heart of Santa Ynez Valley and just go from winery to winery and experience those tasting rooms. You can also do a walking tour of in downtown Santa Barbara and just hop from winery to winery. And if you do the former, where you're driving, you can go up to Lompoc and go to Melville Vineyards. But you can also just walk around downtown and just sample wines from different wineries. There's the Robler Winery. There's so many. I can't even tell you. Go into our page where my wonderful colleague, Nicole Adelman, wound up putting together a really great list. But also, too, one thing that I've noticed in my last trip is that there's a ton of wineries that are offering non-alcohol wines for those who don't partake, and they're wonderful. So you can still participate in all the goodness that is Central Valley wine, whether you're a drinker or not.
And then it's dinner time, and there's some fine dining to be done, right?
Yes.
In SB. Yes. So let's talk about it.
There's my editor, Matthew Kang. He loves Lokita, and I actually love it too. You know, when you have a really great tapas joint, you just go and you order a ton of things like pancook tomate with their wonderful, the Spanish, I don't know what they do to their potatoes, but they're just outstanding. Who doesn't love potatoes? And it's just got charm in the room. You know, there's this just really colorful space. Got to have wine with your tapas. But if you're not in the mood for that, there's another joint that is old, kind of old school and been around for a long time called the Honor Bar. And, you know, they just make really great food. And they also have a really great deal for anyone who comes in a little bit early, where you get a prefix meal. And it's also just one of those other great places where you can sit at a bar and really enjoy just the scene, you know, in the room. It's just a wonderful place to be.
And then once you're done with all of that and you have your dessert, which, again, a lot of sweet tooth places all over SB, you load yourself onto a wheelbarrow. And you you go either back to the train station, right? Because you're rolling. You're not walking anymore. You're waddling to someplace else to get back home, or whether you live close by or not, right?
You are pretty much waddling back to the train station or wherever you've parked. And I know that you have a sweet tooth. I'm not huge on sweets. I never have been, but I will stop at Tondi Gelato. They make their gelato fresh every day. They buy the ingredients from the farmer's market right on State Street, which happens every week. And they're open late. They stay open until 10 o'clock. So you really do have time to make that trek to Tondi all the way down to the train station and sleep your way home on the train.
Sounds like a perfect day in Santa Barbara. Mona Holmes, eater reporter, of course, our regular here at GLA. Mona, thanks.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, all that food waste you've been putting in your green bin is likely getting driven to Bakersfield in Kern County. Why is that, though? And is it really saving emissions? That's next week on the program. A lot of housing for homeless veterans is just sitting empty because red tape makes it hard for anyone to qualify to live in that housing. That story coming up next week on GLA. You know, this program on the radio and in your podcast feed is made possible by people. We are people-powered. Not bees, not wine in Santa Barbara, you. And if you're hearing the sound of my voice, let me tell you, It is a tough time for media companies in general. That's why KCRW is putting out an SOS, Save Our Summer. Like many other public radio organizations, public media organizations, our sponsorship revenue is down, and that means we need you as a member to help meet the urgent need of the moment. So you can give to keep us whole, to keep us strong and healthy for the summer. Your support is our secret sauce. KCRW.com/give. And thank you so much for your support of public radio. While you're there, grab the podcast too. KCRW.com. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Guys, Phil Richards, Amy Talk, Carlos Ramirez, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all help put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your time and your ear. Have a great night.